Hey everybody, Drew Perode here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. Today, I have Scott Nelson on the podcast talking to us about red light therapy and light therapy. He's one of the co-founders of Juve. It's a company that's doing some innovative stuff in this space, but more importantly, I want him to get you excited about the potential and the possibility of light therapy. You're gonna love this interview. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Broken Brain Podcast, where we dive deep into the topics of neuroplasticity, epigenetics, mindfulness, functional medicine, mindset, and more. I'm your host, Drew Perode, and each week my team and I bring on a new guest who we think can help you improve your brain health, feel better, and live more. This week's guest on the podcast is entrepreneur and inventor Scott Nelson. Scott is one of the co-founders of Juve and an advocate for light therapy, which we're talking about in this podcast today. Prior to starting Juve, Scott spent his entire professional career in leadership positions with some of the largest medical device companies in the world, including Medtronic and Boston Scientific. In his spare time, Scott is also the host of MedSider Radio, a top-ranked medical device podcast, which I want to hear more about. Scott, welcome to the Broken Brain Podcast.
Thanks for having me on, Drew. And that intro made me sound way more important than I really am. But I'll take it.
You'll take it. And I know it's a team behind everything you guys do. Shout out to your co-founders. We're going to talk about them and how you guys started and everything else. But before we do that, here's a cool quote from Dr. Michael Hamblin, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, associate professor at Harvard Medical School. Here's what he has to say about light therapy in your company. The benefits of photobiomodulation have been proven in hundreds of clinical studies. With full body light therapy from Juve, you can experience systematic benefits in the comfort of your own home. I use one myself and it comes highly recommended. So first of all, congratulations. I know that this doctor is very accredited, but also it's tough to get quotes from people that are in the academic space. But that all leads me up to this question of what the heck is photobiomodulation and why should our listeners care about it?
Yeah, no, we're fortunate to have Dr. Michael Hamblin, who's arguably one of the world's most well-known kind of researchers when it comes to photobiomodulation, which you pronounce very well, by the way. On that note, it's really the study of the impact of certain wavelengths of light on our biology. And most of the science revolves around a very specific window within the quite broad light spectrum, namely red and near-infrared light wavelengths, and the wide variety of benefits that we can experience by exposing ourselves to these types of wavelengths of light.
So sometimes you hear it referred to as light therapy, you hear red light therapy, and then I guess the scientific term, which is photobiomodulation. What does Juve do within those terms?
Yeah, all of those terms really kind of refer to the same thing. In fact, most of the traditional academics, people like Dr. Michael Hamblin, Dr. Praveen Irani, most of those photobiomodulation researchers are getting more and more consensus around calling laser therapy, or LLLT, which is another acronym that you often find in resources like PubMed as an example, and really trying to get consensus around calling this photobiomodulation, because that's really what it is. But to the layperson, it's light therapy, it's red light therapy, it's near-infrared therapy. Those are often different ways to describe the same thing.
So why is light important to our body, and what is it interacting with to produce some pretty exciting results that we're going to be talking about in a little bit? But just start off with the basics. What does red light do and how does it interact with our body?
Yeah. So before I answer that question, I think this is a really interesting point, because most listeners that are tuning in, they're like, red light therapy, bright red lights. Like, this seems kind of bogus. It seems kind of woo-woo science.
And also, like, what are you talking about? You're talking about like a red light bulb that you buy from like a store? Are you talking about wearing glasses?
Exactly. And we'll hopefully get into some of those differences. But interesting enough, on my drive up here for this podcast, I had a conversation with an engineer buddy of mine that's in Minneapolis. And he made that same comment. He was like, I'm seeing all of your posts on LinkedIn about like all of these different benefits that come from light therapy. And he's like, I'm kind of almost to the point that like, he's like, and I'm not a skeptic, but I'm kind of at the point where it's like, is this all really that true? Like, are there all these, you know, various benefits, wide ranging benefits that come from, you know, red and near infrared light therapy? And I was like, look, like, it sounds, I don't blame you. It sounds like too good to be true. It sounds like a late night, TV infomercial, But the unique thing about this modality, and it's what I would argue it's probably one of the you know, very few modalities that's supported by so much published peer-reviewed science. So all of the benefits that we'll get into anyone can look at these studies. They're all published and readily available on PubMed. But some of those benefits include everything from enhanced muscle recovery to reduce joint pain and inflammation to better cognitive function or brain health. There's really even some interesting, compelling science that hopefully we'll discuss in a little bit more detail around enhanced hormone health that comes from red and near infrared light exposure. So tons of benefits, but they all kind of this topic is so underappreciated because most people, myself included, 3 or 4 years ago before we started Juve, did not think that light should be a sort of fit into the equation for overall health. And that's one of our mission statements at Juve is to bring more awareness and get people to realize or help people to realize that light is this underappreciated aspect to our health and we should be more cognizant of it, both, you know, exposing ourselves to the wrong kinds of light, but also exposing ourselves to the right kind of light, the healthy kind that can induce some of these benefits.
So we've heard Dr. Hyman, my business partner, you know, he talks regularly about this on his podcast and he says that food is information, but what you're also talking about is light is information. So how does light affect our mitochondria?
Mm-hmm. And I'll start out with two different parallels. Hopefully most people understand both of them. So we're here in Southern California. It's hard to drive by a neighborhood that doesn't have a solar panel on their house, right? We're all familiar with the concept that a solar panel sort of harnesses energy from the sun and then repurposes that elsewhere throughout the house for, you know, our electricity needs. So if most people kind of understand that concept, on kind of the flip side to your point about food being information, we all understand that our bodies respond differently to various macronutrients, proteins, fats, carbs. As an example, if I eat a high glycemic carbohydrate late at night, it's going to spike most likely my insulin levels are going to spike. Not a great recipe for overall health. Where our bodies respond to different wavelengths of light as well. As an example, UV light. Most of us understand that, especially when it comes to UVB wavelengths of light, our bodies respond and produce more vitamin D. And so this concept of like our bodies metabolizing different wavelengths of light is not really new when you kind of set the foundation for some of those parallel examples that I mentioned. But I think that's where we have to start in answering, you know, some of these basic questions is that our bodies just they respond to light in various ways, some negative, some positive. And at the highest of levels, these certain wavelengths of light, actually within a very narrow spectrum, red and near infrared light to be more specific, they actually help the mitochondria in our cells, the powerhouse, the engines of our cells, produce more ATP energy. And there's some various mechanisms of action that we'll talk about, but that's sort of the core mechanism of action. These red and near infrared wavelengths of light stimulate the engines, the mitochondria of our cells, to produce more of this energy. And so our cells just function better. And because of that core mitochondrial activity, that's why you see such wide-ranging benefits that are all proven based on published peer-reviewed science. Like these wide-ranging benefits that I just mentioned, they're very wide. There's a lot of them, but it all sort of harkens back to that main core mechanism of action.
Yeah, and what's exciting is, you know, first of all, thank you for being here. We don't have a lot of people that have products that come on the podcast, mm-hmm. but the reason we wanted to have you on when our team connected with you is, and your team, is that I really see you and your co-founders as advocates for light therapy. And sometimes the technology is so new that you need the people who are actually making it to come on and start spreading the word. And you guys didn't invent red light therapy. It's been studied. It's been out there. NASA used to use mm-hmm. it and probably still does for yep. growing plants and working with the astronauts in space. But you guys popularized it to the level and degree that I almost think of it as like, you know, this is a new health technology and we'll think about it the same way, you know, in hopefully in 5, 10 years, 15 years, we'll be thinking about it the same way that we think about like doing a sauna or eating organic food. It's just part of our health routine. So take us to the origin stories. How did you and your co-founders, how did this first idea of red light therapy come into your world? And when did you decide to create a company out of it?
Sure. It's not too dissimilar to like most startup stories. You know, I'm sure you especially can relate to this story, Drew, but this was back in early 2015. We were based in Minneapolis at the time. I spent most of my professional career in traditional MedTech, and that's like the Silicon Valley for the medical device space, Minneapolis. And my wife and then her sister purchased a, I'm using air quotes for the listeners here, a red light therapy package at a local spa in Minneapolis. This was, you know, long, dark winters.
Was it at home or was it at the spa itself?
At the spa itself. Right. So you had to go to the spa, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a week. They sort of sell them in packages, which a lot of spas do. And they were faithful. I mean, this was kind of the dearth of a Minneapolis winter, you know, short days, harsh winters, et cetera. And they've always been interested in alternative health, natural health kind of remedies. And this seemed kind of to be interesting. There wasn't a lot of like go-to resources at the time in early 2015 around light therapy, unless you wanted to, you know, go deep on PubMed. But they went faithfully for over the course of 8 to 12 weeks, 4 to 5 times a week, and actually saw some really nice benefits related to their skin, primarily their skin, but also just
because they had skin issues, right?
Yeah,
I don't know if it was your wife, Liz, or her sister Melissa, but somebody was dealing with eczema.
Yeah, yeah. My sister-in-law Melissa, so my wife's sister Melissa, historically has kind of, you know, had challenges with eczema. They both had multiple pregnancies, so stretch marks and those kind of age spots that come with aging and then multiple pregnancies. So yeah, they saw really, really good benefits when it comes to you know, sort of aesthetic skin issues, so to speak. But they also just felt a lot better, right? They noticed they were sleeping better. They had more energy. It was there's like sounds, you know, fairly qualitative, but their alertness was enhanced from these light therapy sessions. Having said that, it's difficult to go to a commercial setting 3, 4, 5 times a week for that long of a period of time. And so
and what were they charging? Roughly.
Yeah, it's hard to do that and it's expensive, right? I think I can't remember the package price, but it was like, you know, I don't know, 20 odd sessions, something like that for $500-$600, something like that. Yeah. So it gets pricey for sure. Not to say that's not a great way to get introduced into a different therapy for sure, but doing that over and over again is just inconvenient and not budget friendly by any stretch of the imagination. So Melissa was like, I really love this. I want something that I can use at home. And really, I want the rest of my family to use it. And so she, you know, is a great researcher, did a ton of research, dug pretty deep on the topic. And there really wasn't, like I said before, there really wasn't like a lot of great informational resources on the web at the time. This was early 2015. And then from a product standpoint, it was really kind of regulated to super expensive kind of laser-based devices that you'd really only find in a commercial setting. We're talking in, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, or like small underpowered handheld devices that
you usually see that a lot of estheticians have.
You got it.
And they, you know, sell it to their patients to improve their skin. And some people do see results from that, but they're not very powerful.
Yep, you got it. They're very small, so you're limited to a pretty small treatment area. And because they're underpowered, you just have to use it for a prolonged period of time. And that's just hard. I mean, there's not a whole lot of people that are going to use a device for 30, 45, 60 minutes a day. It's just not, you know, compliance around that is pretty difficult. And so Melissa was able to convince her husband, Justin, who's an engineer, hey, can you just like, the ask was pretty simple. It's like, can you just like find something that we can use at home, like build it ourselves? I don't care what it looks like. Just find me something that we can all use at home. And so that's sort of like the very origin story of Juve. Is like he started messing around with some prototypes, dug deep on a couple different kind of what we consider predicate devices that were kind of laser based, really trying to the whole goal was, can we deliver a clinically relevant dose of energy in a small period of time and ideally over a broad surface area so you could get really full body treatment? So that was kind of the core kind of sort of vision that we had for a product, or at least Justin and Melissa had at that time. And then they started to loop me in the conversation. And like I said before, Drew, I was super skeptical. I was like, this is just another kind of woo-woo kind of
therapy. You knew it all because you're in med tech.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm working on stents and balloons for arteries. I'm not going to deal with like something like red light therapy. But, you know, they were pretty passionate about it and they saw results. And I was like, I'm just going to do some PubMed searches just to kind of, you know, see if there's any proof in the pudding, so to speak. And like, sure enough, like I started, you know, doing a bunch of queries on PubMed. I was like, wait a second, like there's like, I'm getting the like 5, 6, 7, 8 pages deep on PubMed. And it's like endless amount of science. And I'm like, why is no one talking about this?
Right.
You know, like across the board, it's hard to find a study that didn't showcase positive results. But like, it's really, really difficult unless you want to go deep on the like the technical aspects of light therapy. It's hard to find anything on the web about like, how does this really work and what is it actually doing? And so I thought to myself, well, there seems to be a product kind of gap, you know, or gap in the marketplace when it comes to products that you could use at home. And then there's no one really kind of raising awareness in a sort of a consumer friendly way around the science of light therapy. And it's like, huh, maybe there's a thing here. And so that's what kind of like, that was sort of the impetus for us kind of starting Juve back in 2015.
And what was your first experience with it? So you were looking on PubMed, you were mm-hmm. like, okay, this isn't bullshit. There's actual science that's there. And mm-hmm. like a lot of really interesting technologies or science or research, sometimes in the academic setting, it just kind of sits a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It sits until somebody, often business people in partnership with scientists,
yep.
come and say, how do we make this available to the public, which is what I appreciate about what you guys are doing.
Yep.
But what was your first session? How long before you actually tried the machine out? And what were some things that you noticed? Again, everybody's different.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you weren't dealing with skin issues. Did you notice any improvements on anything else?
Yeah, no. So I'm like a science first guy, and light therapy is one of the modalities where there's not like the feedback loop is not one-to-one. It's not a quick feedback loop. And so you sort of have to believe that the science is there. So I'm like, That's where I started. It's like, there's so much science to support this. Like it has to work. But in terms of like the benefits that I first received, primarily noticeable enhancements in sleep. That was one.
I would say that's probably one of the top things that people
yep.
have back. Even mm-hmm. my sister, who's using one of the Juve lights right now,
yep.
when I was asking her about it, because I've done some red light therapy. I'm like not consistent with it. And I've only used your device inconsistently.
Yep.
Part of this interview is also get me excited to use it more regularly.
Yep.
But I asked my sister and I gave her the device that I had to use it. And she said, I've just been noticing I've been sleeping a lot better.
Yeah. Yep. So that's probably one of the big benefits I've noticed. Certainly with consistent use over time, I think everyone experiences skin benefits. You know, you get enhanced collagen production, a little bit less wrinkles, smoother, kind of fuller looking skin. So I've noticed those. And then the other benefit is this was when we were kind of testing prototypes, but I had medial epicondylitis, or like tennis elbow, if you will, back in 2015. So I was just holding like my elbow directly like on the light, and I noticed a much faster, I've had it before, so I noticed a much faster recovery period or like healing time, if you will, when it comes to an injury. And that's one of the benefit areas, you know, faster healing times, injury recovery, that's supported by loads and loads of science, especially. So those are probably the three big ones that come to mind.
So red light therapy, what do you know about its origins
mm-hmm.
and when it started to be a device that human beings would, you know, Dave Asprey has been on the podcast before. I know you guys are friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you know, biohacking is the science and the art of changing the environment around you to achieve certain goals.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no red light therapy in a technological sense. We had the sun
mm-hmm.
for a long time, but when did people first start using it under human control for specific results?
This is a really interesting question, because we hear that a lot. It's like, why does it seem like anyone who's sort of tuned into sort of like, you know, health and wellness, functional medicine, et cetera, is probably thinking, or has at least probably heard a little bit about light therapy. That's like, why am I hearing about this all the time now? And so it's a super interesting question. And the concept of like using light as medicine is not new at all, to your point. It's sort of kind of largely known as heliotherapy hundreds of years ago. It's quite common for hospitals, especially in Europe, to wheel their patients out into the sun for the healing benefits that come from full spectrum sunlight. So it's definitely not a new topic. And I think a lot of people kind of, you know, using that as kind of a foundation to kind of talking point, if you will, a lot of people then say, well, isn't this the thing that NASA invented? And that's not really true either, because the photobiomodulation community has been around a lot longer than when NASA kind of got involved in the space. Having said that, NASA did fund quite a few studies with their first interest being, can we use these wavelengths of light to grow plants in space for astronauts? What they discovered was that the astronauts themselves benefited quite a bit from exposure to red and near infrared light. And so that led to...
We're kind of like plants ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, maybe the mechanisms are a little bit different, but the concept of using light and our bodies using light and then repurposing that into usable energy is not, you know, it's not terribly different than plants. And so NASA did fund some early work, especially in regards to using LEDs for photobiomodulation. And so that's probably the newest concept. Is we're now seeing a trend in commercial settings. You'll still find lasers being used. Not lasers that heat up your skin per se, but lasers that deliver these specific wavelengths of light. But now with the advent of LED, modern day LED technology, you can, especially with medical grade drivers, you can deliver sort of laser like power for a lot less money, and you can treat a lot broader surface areas. So a lot of those researchers in the photobiomodulation community especially are starting to coin the term LEDT or LED therapy. We're seeing sort of an emergence, especially over the past probably 5 years, around interest in studying light therapy, especially light therapy with the use of LEDs for a wide range of benefits.
And I know from, my background being Indian and everything like that, in the Ayurvedic tradition, you would have individuals who would talk about meditating first thing in the morning and getting light directly into, like staring directly into the sun, but in that sort of key phase where it's just rising, where the light is not going to burn your eyes or cause damage.
Yep.
You have also in the Ayurvedic tradition, people talking about like energizing your water. There's been I don't know of any studies that have been done on it, but they would literally talk about putting water out in like a glass and putting out in the sun, and whether that was, like just folklore or whether there was something to it. There was a lot of communication, understanding in Ayurvedic traditions, and I'm sure in other traditions too, about the power of light to heal.
Yeah. I mean, and I think some of those ancient traditions, like we're starting to learn more about like the science that actually supports a lot of those, like Gerald Pollack, as an example, authored the book, The Fourth Phase of Water, which is, he's pretty clearly showcasing that actually infrared light specifically, which is part of the full spectrum of sunlight, actually does create a different like exclusion zone water, which has some interesting health benefits. So I think that ancient tradition of having, sort of energizing your water, there's actually some science that supports that. It's real science that we're just kind of now catching on to.
This podcast should be called "Your Great Great Grandmother Was Right, Don't Question Her."
That's right.
Instead of the Broken Brain Podcast, because all these traditions are coming back, but we have, importantly, the science to support it. So there's now over 1,000 clinical trials that support red light therapy's efficacy. Let's jump into some of that. This podcast is called Broken Brain because it's all about how your brain is not broken. And there's a lot of tools, technologies, resources that are out there that can help us think better, feel better, improve our mood, and get to the root cause of the chronic diseases that some people are facing. So let's talk about cognitive function. What do we know about red light therapy and cognitive function?
This is one of the interesting kind of emerging health categories with respect to the benefit of using light therapy. Especially over the past 2 to 3 years, there's been some really interesting and really well-structured studies around two different aspects when it comes to cognitive function. One would be participants that have suffered from some sort of brain injury, like a TBI or CTE, from multiple concussions or a car accident or some other type of
even hitting your head like really hard on the door or shelf.
Yep.
Which a lot of people have had.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, there's probably a much higher percentage of people that have suffered from some even a mild form of a brain injury than most people think. But that's sort of one aspect to brain health. And the other one was like, kind of more brain health for wellness benefits, like faster reaction times, enhanced memory retention, faster learning times, et cetera. And so there's actually been some really well-structured studies, especially over the past 2 to 3 years, that have showcased with the first kind of cohort of participants, those that have suffered from brain injuries, you actually get much light, especially near infrared light, is actually showing that not only can these types of wavelengths prevent injury, but actually reduce a lot of the symptoms that come from, TBIs and CTEs and other brain injuries. So I think that's really interesting and really points to sort of two things: is the ability of red and infrared light to reduce oxidative stress, right? So reduce stress and also enhance new synapse production, neurogenesis, synaptogenesis in the brain. And so I think really those two mechanisms are really beginning to kind of play themselves out to be very, very consistent and true across, a number of studies now. And with respect to the other kind of, cohort of participants, right? Those that are focused on using near-infrared light for more wellness benefits related to the brain. Those are really interesting because you wouldn't expect, you know, immediate exposure to near-infrared light to actually enhance reaction time. And so I think the interesting thing about some of those studies is how quickly our bodies do respond to these wavelengths of light in positive ways. So it's not something that you have to use chronically for a long period of time to reap to see the benefits. I mean, participants are seeing benefits not only after each session, but in a relatively short amount of time. We're talking weeks, not months and months and months.
So for the practitioners who use your product or another medical grade mm-hmm. device that's, you know, that they've been using for a while before you guys had around, what do you see in terms of the implementation when it comes to things like traumatic brain injury, right? Is this just something as an ongoing maintenance they have? I know every patient is different. Every person who has a brain injury is different, but how are they applying it? What's the dosage? What are you kind of noticing out there?
Yeah. So, and let me be clear. Our devices aren't cleared by FDA for, you know, specific, you know, the specific treatment of
right.
Of
it would
brain
be used
injuries.
as a therapy yeah. in the process of just general wellness.
Exactly.
It's not being used or sanctioned for this specific thing.
Exactly. But there are a number of practitioners that are beginning to use, you know, this type of therapy just because it's, these types of injuries are so hard to treat, right? But I think it's very, so to answer your question, I think it's very emerging. So there's not a lot of practitioners that are using this type of therapy, but the science is becoming more and more clear. And so another product on the market that's been studied actually in a few of these studies is the V-Light. So it's transcranial light therapy. So it's the device that you'd stick up your nose and it delivers light kind of, through your cranium, through your nasal cavity. So I think that they've done some really interesting work. So, you know, kudos to the team at V-Light for some of their work with respect to, you know, brain health, and brain and showcasing the benefits of these wavelengths of light for reducing symptoms of, you know, TBI and CTE. So that's one device that I think is pretty interesting, but, on the flip side, it's becoming more and more clear that, near-infrared light has the unique ability to penetrate pretty deep inside our body, even through bone. And so you don't necessarily have to stick a device in your nose per se. You could simply apply it, to the outside of on your forehead or the outside of your brain and still see benefits as long as the device is producing a certain amount of power. If it's underpowered, that energy is going to dissipate as it travels through bone. So it's got to be high enough powered to induce a clinically relevant result. But I think that's sort of an interesting thing that we're seeing more and more and more is that near-infrared light can penetrate through bone and actually stimulate some of that neurogenesis that I mentioned, that synaptogenesis that I mentioned. So creating new synapses, creating new nerve tissue, enhancing cerebral blood flow, et cetera.
Let's talk about power. Mm-hmm. How much power are we talking about when it comes to infrared light? Obviously, human beings don't have the ability to see it, mm-hmm. right? It's part of that wavelength of light that's coming out of a device that's there.
Yep.
But what are the measurements and what kind of power are you talking about to see the impact in some of these conditions that we're referencing?
Yep. And I think for most sort of like wellness benefits, like if you're not maybe trying to treat a specific thing, I think power is a little bit less important as long as it's you know, medical grade power. And what I mean by that is if you're picking up a cheap device on Amazon, as an example, that's not supported by any sort of like independent diagnostic data, I'd probably question that a little bit. Highly likely that it's a pretty underpowered device. But when you're using a higher powered device for the purposes of penetrating through bone for like brain health benefits, yeah, it does need to deliver a fair amount of energy. I mean, we're talking about if the term that's or the measurement that's often used is irradiance or photon flux, which is the amount of energy that's delivered from the device, and arguably more important would be how much energy your body is actually absorbing. So you definitely need a higher powered device. You can still see benefits from a lower powered device. You just have to use them for a prolonged period of time. And so, I think that's just an important point to consider is like, make sure like, you know, any device that you consider is supported by, you know, independent third party diagnostic data for the ability to generate a certain amount of joules of energy, for your body to absorb. So that's one thing that, that's one thing to consider, but the other side of the equation is we're in conjunction with really well-known photomedicine researchers. We're learning more and more about dose responses, and I think for certain issues like treating symptoms of Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, for example, we're learning more and more that actually the dose is pretty important when it comes to those types of conditions. And so if you're looking for enhanced memory, tension, faster reaction times, kind of more of those general wellness benefits, maybe not as an important. The dosage isn't as important, but when it comes to treating Parkinson's, treating Alzheimer's, maybe treating TBI, CTs, et cetera, you know, really honing in on the dose is becoming, you know, more and more important. And so that's generally speaking, I hate to sound kind of vague around that, but that's really where, like, you know, for those certain conditions, it's really best to speak with a practitioner that's familiar with light therapy that can help kind of optimize that dose response.
Speaking of Alzheimer's, has there been any research that's out there in the space of Alzheimer's or dementia as a whole, which, you know, over 50 million people mm-hmm. suffer with in America, and it's growing every day. What's the research show about red light therapy and that condition?
Yeah, this whole kind of aspect of kind of brain health, as an example, it's one of these really, really emerging categories. In fact, Dr. Araney, who I mentioned earlier in our discussion, he actually just sent me a paper. He called it the buckets paper, and it was in essence a small participant size that basically created these DIY home devices that sit on your head, kind of similar to like maybe the LED hats that are being used for hair growth, as an example. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But these were delivering near infrared light, and it looked like something from Back to the Future. You know, like what's the guy's name with white hair?
Doc something. What's his name, Louis?
Doc Brown. Literally would be something like you'd see Doc Brown using. But what I think his email was like, Scott, check this out. It leaves me with two feelings. One, super pumped about like how much these patients are responding, like patients with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia, really, really difficult to treat conditions. How amazing they're responding to simple light therapy, near infrared light therapy. But on the flip side, like there was a clear difference between like in their dose responses. Some people responded very, very favorably to certain doses, while others, it was sort of a mediocre and insignificant response. And so we're learning more and more about that. So it's hard for me to say, hey, you need to look for this type of energy for this application. But I think it's becoming more and more important for some of these very specific health conditions, that energy dose that your brain is receiving is becoming really, really important to consider.
Yeah. And part of the functional medicine model that Dr. Hyman and other practitioners, you know, teach and practice is that, you know, it's not one thing that led to this disease. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be one cure. So red light therapy, in addition to diet, in addition to all these factors that are there that you're looking at for a patient, a high percentage of patients that have Alzheimer's and dementia also have, you know, mold colonies in their nasal cavity that's there, often have high levels mm-hmm. of heavy metal. And the moral of the story is that maybe there might not be one study that comes out and says this is linked to the vast reduction of it, but could be part of the overall approach of reducing the impact of something like Alzheimer's. And I think that's what functional medicine practitioners get excited about, especially when something like near red light infrared mm-hmm. therapy is like, you know, the side effects, mm-hmm. right? There's not really any side effects.
Yep. And right? That's what I was just going to say, because I want to leave the listeners with something like they can take home, right? Yeah. I don't want to leave it vague, this kind of topic vague. I think the overarching point is that exactly. It's hard to sort of overuse near infrared light. You know, there is certainly kind of what appears to be a law of diminishing returns, meaning that you can't just use it for hours and hours and hours and expect 10, 20, 30x the result. You do reach kind of a time period where basically your cells just stop responding. They almost need a break. Because remember, you're stimulating your mitochondria to produce more energy. So chronic exposure to anything is probably not a good thing.
Even water.
Yeah, even water. Exactly. I mean, that's the analogy I actually use quite often. It's kind of like, it's hard to drink too much water. You can,
and some people have.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same kind of concept holds true when it comes to light therapy. So hard to do too much, but if you've got like a family member, a friend, a loved one that's like has Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and you're into this concept of using a safe, natural kind of holistic treatment, that's where we'd say, let's help you like identify a practitioner that's semi-familiar with this, and maybe help that practitioner connect with a photomedicine researcher to maybe optimize the dose in that scenario where they can reap the most benefits in the shortest amount of time.
And do you guys do that? Is
we
that
do.
Something people can reach out to Juve and you can do a little bit of practitioner matchmaking?
We do. We have, as an example, we have kind of a unique feature like on our site actually that allows people to query a database of over 3,000 studies about a wide variety of conditions. So we get that question a lot. Does light therapy help with X? Does light therapy help with Y? So that's a very easy to use resource. And then we have a really, really high quality support team in place that if a customer needs like another level of support, we'll try to make the connection just because we know that group of KOLs that's, you know, thought leaders, physician, researcher, thought leaders that's working on a certain topic, and we'll try to help connect those people together.
Super exciting. So, I mean, not that, you know, there's a lot of people that are suffering from Alzheimer's dementia. There's a lot of people, you know, if you're listening, you're like, okay, is it for these like chronic conditions that are there? It's for a lot more than that. Mm-hmm. You know, seasonal affective disorder is something that a lot of people suffer from. I primarily lived on the East Coast. I grew up in the little state of Delaware. Shout out to all my peeps from Delaware. and every winter from pretty much a young age, I would notice that once it starts getting like, you know, super cloudy, probably the cold doesn't help. There's a genuine shift in my mood. Mm-hmm. What have we seen with red light therapy and seasonal affective disorder?
Yeah, and I think I can completely relate. I grew up in the upper Midwest, and so this time of year, recording this in late October, you know, you're kind of staring down sort of the long winter of gray skies and cold temps, you know. So I think anyone that's lived in those types of climates can relate to this. And there's no doubt you're seeing this more and more covered in the media this time of year too, where it's like, you know, anyone who's suffering from some sort of seasonal depressive disorder or anything related to that, it's a very real thing. Most of the research historically is related to bright white light therapy. So using,
yeah, and then you'll see people buying like these GE lights,
happy lamps,
or other stuff.
Yep, and there's a couple like decently structured studies that showcase the fact that when compared to a pharmaceutical drug, that patients actually received similar benefits to using a happy lamp. So
some are even blue lamps.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, blue. They deliver bright blue or bright white light, and so. Again, another kind of, you know, we started off the conversation talking about how our bodies respond to these different wavelengths of light in different ways. I would argue people that suffer from SAD or some sort of seasonal depressive disorder probably shouldn't be using that therapy at night because that's going to disrupt their circadian rhythm. It's going to be almost a signal to your brain that you should be wide awake.
It will create this, you know, slowing down of the production of melatonin.
Exactly.
And that will lead to a harder time falling asleep.
But when used maybe in the morning or midday, that's actually a good signal to your brain that you should be producing more cortisol. You should be alert and awake. So there's definitely some science that supports that. There's no doubt. We're beginning to learn more and more about actually red and near infrared light for seasonal depressive disorder as well. And I think that's super interesting because in theory you could sort of get more bang for your buck, right, with a red or near infrared light device because not only will it help you with, you know, seasonal depressive disorder, but you'll reap a lot of other benefits too, whether it's skin health, reduction of pain and inflammation, enhanced brain function, like we talked about. So we're learning more and more. In fact, we just published a really nice article on our site about this specific use case with a couple testimonials from docs that are using our devices for patients that suffer from depressive disorder. One in particular here is at UCLA, and he treats, I wouldn't classify his patients. They don't really suffer from SAD per se. It's really more of like a mild or significant depressive disorder. But in conjunction with other modalities, he's seeing them respond much faster. In fact, I think his quote was like, he's never actually seen an adjunct therapy like this. He's never been able to, his patients have never experienced this fast of results with an adjunct therapy. Like red and near infrared light therapy. So I think there's
incredible.
It's one of those. It's very emerging. We hope to sponsor a lot more clinical studies in this category. But again, it's super promising and really showcases another benefit to red and near infrared light.
So a question for you. I was talking with my girlfriend just this morning, and I was explaining the light therapy and the fact that I have an interview with you, and I just had a few minutes briefly, and so I set it up for her while I was taking a shower, and I was like, oh, babe, you know, you should try this. And she was like, well, if your sister uses it to go to sleep and I'm using it in the morning, won't it relax me? And I don't know if this is the correct analogy, but I was saying, you know, the goal of red light therapy is to just get your cells to do better what their natural function is. So it's not like it has a stimulating effect or it has a depressive effect. Like if it's trying to put you, you know, asleep, it's not like taking melatonin or it's not like taking like a B12 supplement. It's kind of like whatever your cells, whatever your mitochondria need to be doing in that moment, red light therapy supports that. Is that correct? Or am I just talking out of my ass?
No, it's true. No, it's true. And it actually, if used in the morning as an example, that's a common question that comes up. If people are using it at night to help them sleep better, am I just going to feel groggy and sleepy if I use it in the morning? And our bodies are very smart, right? So if you're exposing yourself to red and near infrared light in the morning, your body will produce more melatonin. But if you're sort of protecting your circadian rhythm, your natural circadian rhythm, your body won't. And what I mean by that is if you're not doing things that are going to disrupt that circadian rhythm in the evening, your body will release the melatonin naturally at the right time. And so using red and near infrared light in the morning is actually a good thing. I mean, they're actually, when you look at the natural sunrise and sunset, most of the red and near infrared light wavelengths are found in the sunrise and sunset. So it makes more sense, sort of like based on ancestral health or ancestral medicine, that we'd be using this type of therapy in the morning or in the evening. But our bodies respond in a very adaptive, very smart way. And so, yes, they'll produce more melatonin in the morning, but they won't release it until the right time, until you're ready to go to bed, as long as you're not doing, you know, not staring at blue lights at night, you know what I mean? And doing things that are going to disrupt that natural circadian rhythm.
Besides, from your research, besides releasing, producing more melatonin so it can release it at night, what else is happening in the morning that makes red light therapy supportive in the morning for being alert, being ready for the day, and so you can get on and go do what you need to do?
Yeah, I think some of those aspects can be sort of quantified based on biology, like the melatonin example that we just talked about. Others are a little bit more qualitative. Like I use the therapy every morning. So I have our largest system. I actually stand on, you mentioned Dave Asprey earlier. I stand on the bulletproof vibration plate,
right?
You know, for about 6 or 7 minutes on the front side. I flip around the back side. I just do breath work at the same time. So trying to stack, you know, different things to sort of act as a reset to my, you know, to my morning, to my day. So I think on that note, it does help your body shift from a sympathetic to a parasympathetic state, helps reduce oxidative stress. Clearly there's science that supports it, prepares your body for, your brain, I should say, for, enhanced learning, for faster reaction times, et cetera, which is another common kind of anecdotal, report that we hear back from.
And what's the link to testosterone?
Yeah, testosterone. Really interesting. So Ben Greenfield kind of popularized this a couple years ago, but we're actually, you know, studying.
He's
this
a
ourselves.
Podcaster. He has a podcast. I forgot what it's called. Ben Greenfield podcast.
Ben Greenfield Fitness.
Okay,
yeah, his podcast. Yeah, and he popularized this, and Men's Health did a feature story. You know how he shines red light on his nether regions for testosterone production. Enhanced testosterone production, but that's another, you know, kind of emerging category.
Was there any other research out there? Is that measured, or is just sort of anecdotally he was saying that he's seen this, his sort of like N of one?
So the backstory is interesting. I'll share that real quick. So he knows Dr. Ali Sovajärvi, who's a Finnish kind of biohacker, but he's an MD and he's a kind of a functional medicine physician, pretty well known in Finland. And Ben knows Dr. Sovajärvi really well, and Dr. Ali was like, "Hey, there's something to this therapy. In fact, if you use it to shine it on your, you know, your testicles, you should, in theory, see enhanced, you know, testosterone production." So Ben tried it. You know, he's kind of willing to try almost, you know, pretty much anything, I think. And he didn't get before and after blood work done, but we've had a lot of other kind of, you know, pretty well known health and wellness influencers get their pre and post blood work done before and after red and near infrared light therapy. But Ben reported back like really enhanced libido, sexual performance, etc. And then we started noticing other people like Mike Munsell, Luke Story, other kind of, you know, well-known health and wellness influencers. They did get their blood work done. Only thing they introduced into their regimen was red and near infrared light therapy, and they saw significant increases in their not only in their total testosterone but their free testosterone as well. And so we started hearing all this anecdotal feedback, and we're like, we need to actually study this, you know? And so we actually just wrapped up our first one with a group in called Bristlecone Medical in Minneapolis. Dr. Kelly Gibbous was the principal investigator. Relatively small participant size, but we measured
how many people?
We studied male and female, hormone biomarkers in both male and female. With male, I think the participant size was, I believe, 15 to 20. So not tiny, but like not huge by
any means.
Enough
to get it started and to see if something's there, and that often leads to a bigger study.
You got it. You got it. And so what we found is in men, so we looked at two, we split the men and women into two different groups. Those that kind of remain on a standard American diet and then introduced full body red and near infrared light therapy. The other group ate a ketogenic diet and then it did the same thing, full body red light therapy every day. What we found in men is the men that just introduced light therapy saw anywhere from 20 to 40% increases in both their free and their total testosterone. Pretty dramatic.
Huge. Like if a drug could, I mean, you know, besides just injecting pure testosterone inside the body, like if a drug could do that, that would be considered pretty significant.
And it's not the only benefit they're getting. I mean, they're getting all these other ancillary benefits too, but the ketogenic group, so those that ate a ketogenic diet over the course of these 12 weeks, saw massive increases in test. We're talking like 150 to 300% increases in both total and free testosterone. Mm. So like really clear that like there's some really interesting synergies between, you know, a ketogenic diet or a, you know, a moderately high fat, you know, very low carb diet and red and near infrared light therapy. And we did this Q&A kind of write up summary article with Dr. Gibbous, and she called out her theories as to why you'd see these synergistic mechanisms with both. But what's interesting is a common question that we get on this topic is, well, with women, are they going to see testosterone, or what's their hormone production going to look like? I mean, if men are getting, you know, are seeing testosterone increases. And interesting enough, we studied progesterone to estrogen ratios in women. And so, you know, most females that are listening are probably familiar that as they age, just like men's T levels go down, progesterone production goes down in females. And what we saw is actually very similar increases in progesterone production in women. And even more maybe interesting is we actually saw the balance of progesterone and estrogen stay very healthy in those women. And so really, really interesting results in both men and women when it comes to, you know, introducing red and near infrared light therapy on a consistent basis, both on and off a ketogenic diet. Either way, it's like it was a win-win, but even better results when you introduce that type of, you know, that type of, you know, nutritional kind of regimen, you're seeing even better results. So that's a category that, I mean, we're not aware of anyone else that that studied red and near infrared light therapy for kind of hormone production. Mm-hmm. And so we'll do more and more of this type of work moving forward, which is pretty cool.
When you zoom out and you look at sort of the evolution of humanity, you know, we used to be individuals who spent a lot of time outside. Mm-hmm. And now in a weird way, we just have this strong fear of the sun aging us, sun exposure, sun spots, mm-hmm. you know, other kind of components that are there. When you look at like a lot of things like people having not enough testosterone production at a certain age, not enough this there. Of course, our diets have played a role, but how much do you think about us just not being in the sun and living the lives that we normally lived, yep. being a big part of some of the chronic health conditions we see?
I think that may be the single biggest takeaway people that are listening to our conversation should walk away with, would be they need to be more cognizant of their natural light exposure. Because there's a pretty well-known stat now that Americans spend 93% of our lives indoors under artificial light. When I first heard that stat, I was like, no way, that's like drastically too high. But and this was in Minneapolis at the time, and I thought, wait a second. And this was before Juve. I was like, I actually probably spend more than that of my time indoors, you know, especially in the winter months. You know, get up in the morning, get ready for the job, commute. You know, it's still dark outside, spend all day in the office. Then when I'm going home, the sun has already set. I'm like, I spend almost no time outside in natural sunlight. And so I think it's like that shift has happened so drastically, kind of that shift in our modern lifestyles, being exposed to so much artificial light and so little natural light. I think it's led to, you know, a lot of, it's not, it may not be the primary driving factor, but it is a factor that's led to a lot of like chronic conditions that we now face, you know, along with other things, high glycemic carbohydrate diets, et cetera, et cetera. There's a long list of those types of issues, but light is one of these underappreciated aspects. And the one thing that people listening to this should walk away from is like, don't go rush and buy a light therapy device. Try to just get more natural sunlight. Try to spend 10, 15, 20 minutes a day outside. Ideally, you can, you know, take off your shirt or do something like that, but at least get some time outside. And then if you feel like you don't, you just, your lifestyle doesn't support it, maybe look into, you know, some type of light therapy device that could help supplement your lifestyle. Not too different than, you know, we talked about, you know, clean and the workup that often comes with patients that are going to a functional medicine practitioner. Typically, there's some supplements that you can use up front to help kind of like as you begin to heal, you need
some probiotic. Here's a digestive enzyme.
Exactly.
These are things that can be supportive in your process of healing.
Yep. You can't expect someone who lives in Minneapolis, Minnesota, to get a bunch of natural light during the winter. Like, it's hard to do. Maybe if you're extreme, but it's hard to do. So, you know, supplementing your lifestyle with a light therapy device like a probiotic or something like that is, could be a nice step in the right direction. I think that's how people should kind of begin to like frame light therapy, is just a way to supplement your lifestyle with light. That's really like a really underappreciated aspect to our overall health.
And for people who, you know, whether it's their dermatologist or their own sort of readings and things like that, who have fear of the sun and the sun aging you and being outside, you know, what are your recommendations from them? Can they, do you just suggest like they do it like early in the morning or like late at night, sunrise, sunset, as a way to like reduce some of like the harsher impact that they feel the sun is having on them?
Yeah, I mean, there's, I don't want to dismiss that overexposure to like intense UV light can cause damage. That's pretty clear. I mean, I'm a, for those audio listeners, I'm a ginger, right? I've got, you know, fairly decently red hair, but I try to like it during, especially when the UV index is pretty decent here in Southern California, I'll go outside and work up to 20, 30, 45 minutes and not get burned at all. So I think there's this, a lot of people have this, this fear that really isn't rooted in much. Again, not to dismiss that like overexposure to sunlight can yield some harmful effects, but it's usually in extreme cases. It's usually the scenario where I'm inside every day of the week, Monday through Friday, and then I go to the kids with the beach for 3 or 4 hours in bright sunlight.
Without any protection and sunscreen, which is toxic.
Yeah.
And the sun is baking it into your skin. It's all this like crap that's inside of it.
Yeah.
Immediately gets absorbed into your body. Like, that's not the right way to do the sun.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just like, I mean, it's not too dissimilar to most kind of introducing most sort of health modalities. You need to do it the right way. And so sunlight can be a very, very like, it's free medicine. You know, we recently had a conversation with Dr. Ara Sipaya, who trains a lot of tennis and golf professionals on ATP and PGA tours. He often refers to these things as like free medicine, and sun is one of those. But you got to do it right, of course. But ease into it. Start with 5 minutes. Start with 10 minutes. Start with, you know, ease up into 15, 20, 30 minutes a day, and it can yield some really, really powerful things, and it's completely free. If you can't do that, look at, you know, a light therapy device as a way to just supplement your lifestyle.
So I have the Juve. I notice it has a timer and it kind of automatically switches off.
Yep.
What's the reasoning behind that?
We include the timer. We have certain treatment recommendations based on the power our devices deliver. And so generally speaking, we recommend, you know, with our devices, depending on which one you have, a treatment distance of about 6 inches or so. We don't expect you to get out a tape measure. About 6 inches away from the device for about 8 to 10 minutes or so, something like that. And that will generally, for most people, lead that are looking for kind of more general wellness benefits.
Optimization. Feeling better.
Exactly. That
shining
that's
a light on their nether regions.
Exactly. Better libido, better brain health, you know, feeling better, reducing, you know, sad related kind of symptoms. That will generally result in a clinically relevant dose of energy that your body absorbs. And so that timer is there for those purposes, you know, set it for, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, et cetera. It's pretty simple.
Which is what I liked about the way that you talked about it, how you use it in your routine is that there's so many things that everybody can do. And, you know, you have to look at like, how much time do you want to spend every morning and every evening doing other things that are there?
Right.
And I love when you can add something into your routine that you can do other stuff along with it.
Right. Right. And because, so like your Juve Mini, for example, comes with the desktop stand, and a lot of people, they'll bring it to their office with them, you know, so as they're working, you know, it might be a little bit further than our normal treatment recommendations, but maybe you do it for a little bit longer and the dosage is kind of, you know, they kind of even out, but that's a great way. Like why not introduce something like that, you know, while you're doing emails for 20 or 30 minutes and boom, you're done. You know,
what are other crucial things that you include in your morning routine or evening routine to support just you living your best life?
Mm-hmm. So there's probably a number of things that come to mind. I mentioned this earlier. Like my morning routine is typically standing in front of our largest system, the Juvelite, which is kind of like your head to toe kind of full body treatment. I stand on a vibration plate because it's super easy. Like, why not? You know, I mean, why not stand on a vibration?
And for anybody that's not familiar with the vibration plate and like what it does, just give us the quick 30 seconds on it.
Yeah, I mean, there's various vibration types of technologies, but the one I use is Dave's ViPlate, but pretty simple. It's just a platform, and it helps. The high level kind of rationale, or the high level kind of explanation, is that it helps like stimulate your lymphatic system. Wakes up your lymphatic system.
We have this lymphatic system in our body, you know, body's detoxification process, and our lymphatic system only, the lymphatic fluid in our body only moves when we move.
Mm-hmm.
And so this vibration helps that process. And also another thing that, you know, NASA had used and used a much larger device for bone density.
Yep.
They saw that a lot of astronauts, their bone, because it did not have the resistance of gravity, sometimes their bones would shrink inside of space. So they created this vibration plate to support that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some really interesting like science around.
Yeah. Interesting.
So I stand on that during, okay, you know, over the course of these, you know, roughly, you know, 12 to 15 minutes total. And then at the same time, I'm typically listening to like a podcast or something as well, but I'll do some breath work. And the breath work is something that I'm relatively new, to, and historically, for me personally, I've always had a hard time shutting off, right? I've always had kind of pretty high demanding, grinding sort of like, you know, jobs in my career. And so shutting off has been very difficult for me. And so breath work enables me to really kind of like enter into a, I don't want to sound cliche here, but enter into like a better flow state, into a more parasympathetic state.
Get out of the monkey mind.
Exactly.
Step into a place of just like rest and relaxation.
Exactly. And so those are some of the core modalities that I use like in the morning. In the evening, we're like, my wife, our kids, we're big fans of like not trying to minimize the amount of like bright artificial white or blue light in the evenings, especially once the sun sets.
Again, so what does that look like? Does that look like you guys changing the lights in your house?
Yeah, an easy thing to do is just buy light bulbs with a lower Kelvin temperature. So the more warmer, kind of orangier temperature, that they don't look weird. They look pretty normal, and it's easier on your
eyes.
But
they're not LED lights. They're like the traditional kind of like older.
You can buy LEDs with lower Kelvin temperatures.
Okay,
you can also buy incandescents as well. Incandescent mm-hmm. sources that are lower in Kelvin. Typically, I think you'll find more incandescent sources with lower Kelvin temperatures, but kind of the more orangier, kind of warmer light, similar like a fire, right?
Right.
Again, harkening kind of back to our ancestors, they used fire to mm-hmm. to illuminate, you know, their surroundings in the evenings. And so trying to mimic that type of feel. There's even like devices like the Casper mat, the mattress company, they have their glow lights, which is like a very like warm, dimmable light that you can use at night. So that's like those are pretty inexpensive. And then if we, you know, I mean, we're not like totally weird, so we're like, we'll watch movies at night, right? But in that scenario, we'll use blue light blocking glasses.
Yeah.
And so to help filter out some of that bright white and that bright blue light.
The whole family's got them on?
Yeah. We've got age ranges of 7 to 16. We've got 4 kids. And so all of them put on that's one of the things that's like so cheap. I mean, you can pick those up for like, you know, I know Dave has his line. There's other lines of
True Dark is Dave's line.
Yeah.
You can find them on Amazon.
Yeah.
And in general, they're all, I mean, I know Dave has taken it to the next level with his, but they're pretty all like pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, $50 to $100, something like that. Pretty low cost. That's something that that feedback loop for me personally with those is like immediate. If I put those on at night, and then take them off, like it's so like the bright light is so like
it's almost overpowering.
It is. And then when I put them on and wear them, there's no doubt that I feel much sleepier. Like as an example, I would never wear those if I was going to drive at night. There's just no way. Like there's,
and just for listeners who are, you know, there, if you're not familiar with these blue mm-hmm. light blocking glasses, they're often like orange or mm-hmm. a dark orange. And sometimes you're in a place where you're watching TV or a movie, or there's a lot of light that's coming from a device or a computer. You might have seen it with like the Apple devices now.
Yep.
They have the orange, you know, nighttime mode.
You got it.
So the screen goes orange. These glasses are just doing that for like a larger setting. Sometimes I would wear them at the gym when I would work out really early in the winter. Mm. And I'm not the full deep orange ones, but ones that are blocking out some of the blue light, because it's just way too bright like super, super early in the morning when it's mm-hmm. still like dark outside.
Yep. Yep. So, I mean, and again, like a pretty simple modality. So like that, those are like very simple, relatively inexpensive, you know, things that you can do to incorporate, into your routine to kind of help balance, you know, some of these things out, you know, based on our modern lifestyles. And the only other thing that I'm currently kind of experimenting with is intermittent fasting. Right. And so I think that's, you know, most people that are listening to this show anyway are pretty familiar with that. And so I think the interesting twist on that is, though, if you read like Dr. Panda's work, as an example, you wrote the Circadian Codes. Mm-hmm. I mean, he suggests that even like coffee, as an example, will be disruptive to like an intermittent fast. And so that's actually what I'm experimenting with now. Is it really like even just black coffee in the morning, should I actually be really just water fasting until a certain amount of time? So that's kind of what I'm playing around with
sure.
right now. But again, another kind of, it's free medicine, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that doesn't cost anything other than just.
And always good to experiment. You know, most mm-hmm. of these tools and technologies, it's like you can try them out. Mm-hmm. You can take it on. You can go outside, be in the sun a little bit more.
Yep.
I think part of the reason that people feel better on vacation is just simply just being out in the sun when they're normally not, you know, out in the sun, being by the water, doing these things. One note about intermittent fasting that I tell people is that fasting was a huge part of my tradition growing up. I would see my parents fast a lot, you know, sometimes just one day, you know, one day a week regularly where they would skip all meals or have only breakfast. And in my process of bringing fasting back into my life, one thing I found is that I don't do well when I skip. Every so often I do completely just like a water fast and I don't eat anything. But if I'm doing it once a week for intermittent fasting, I do better when I have breakfast and I don't have lunch or dinner.
Mm.
And I started talking to Walter Longo and some of his team at ProLon. And they were saying that the vast majority of people in the world, and if you look at the blue zones, they don't skip breakfast. They have breakfast, especially if you have very demanding cognitive tasks like running a company like you're doing, mm-hmm. like I'm doing. You might be better off, and it's just good to play with it, where you actually have your meal in the morning and then don't eat the rest of the day that's out there. So all just part of just mixing and matching and trying stuff to see what works best.
Yeah, there's no doubt. In fact, one of the guys on our team, Thad, who runs our operations and support, he practices intermittent fasting, but he's in a window from about 8 to 4. And so like similar to what you just said, he'll eat kind of the normal kind of, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but he'll stop relatively early, right? And so he still gets a pretty extensive like fasting window, 16 hours in that scenario, but he's not skipping breakfast, he's not skipping lunch, he's having kind of the normal, like, traditional three meals, but just tightening up that fasting window. So yeah, to your point, Drew, I think that's spot on. Like, it's all about experimenting and trying to find how your body responds to certain things and what works best for you over the long haul.
So for Scott, for anybody who's listening, and of course, you know, you're not here to just promote your device. You're here to talk about the advocacy of light therapy. Mm-hmm. But for anybody who's back in your sort of place and mindset where you were pretty skeptical, which also mm-hmm. a healthy dose of skepticism is good,
mm-hmm.
right? And what's the lasting message you'd like to leave for them with light therapy and its future, its current and its future possibilities?
So if you're skeptical, I'd say you're in the right place. I mean, I think it's hard to find someone that wasn't skeptical when they first heard about light therapy or red and near infrared light therapy. But I would just encourage you to take the next step and just trust the science, dig a little bit into the science. I think you'll be pretty impressed with how much science there is and the wide ranging benefits that we chatted about. It's all supported by published peer reviewed science. So I just give it a shot, do a little bit of research, trust the science. And then in terms of like what to do with it, like I said before, you don't have to go rush out and buy a multivitamin, which in this case is a light therapy device. Just be more cognizant of kind of your light environment, how much natural light you get during the day and what type of artificial light you're exposed to in the evenings. That's totally free. Just become more cognizant of those two things. And if you want to like dig into the science more and go deeper on some of the topics that we discussed, one of the things that we do as a company is allocate a lot of resources towards education. And research and education and funding different clinical studies. And so if you're in that boat and want to go deeper on this topic, you know, head on over to our website at juve.com. That's J2O's 2 V's. And there's a learn section on our site where you can go down some pretty interesting rabbit holes on different benefit categories when it comes to light therapy.
And we'll link to the database, which is really cool that you guys have on your website. You know, mm-hmm. I wish more companies would do that. Well, not everything has as much research as light therapy does, so maybe they can't do that. But we'll make sure to link to all of what you mentioned in the show notes. And if listeners want to find you personally, do you Instagram? Do you put content out there on a personal level?
I'm probably most active on LinkedIn, believe it or not.
Okay. LinkedIn is blowing up. There's a lot of people that are sharing content on there, blogging.
Like, it is.
LinkedIn is like early Facebook right now.
I know. I'm not sure if Gary Vee has something to do with that. You know, I mean, he's killing LinkedIn right now. But I'm not active on a ton of social channels anyway. In fact, like on my phone, I don't even have social apps on my phone by intention. If you want to Google Scott Nelson and Juve or something like that, I'm sure you'll find me, but most of my handles are Scott Nelson Live. If you want to look me up, or if you don't want to look me up, totally cool.
Well, Scott, thank you for being here, to talk to us about light therapy, red light therapy, and being an advocate for the space. I really do think the future of medicine and so many of the functional medicine practitioners, including Mark and so many other people that I talk to, feel the same, is that the future of medicine is incorporating light in a significant way. Mm-hmm. We're going to see all sorts of application for it as more and more research continues to come into this field. And in the meantime, people have a lot of great tools and options to start seeing the benefits themselves, including your company. And shout out to my sister, who knew that I didn't really have a lot of time to be able to try something new into my world, was willing to try it out with the Juve Light, and has reported significantly better sleep. It's just a quicker time. I sleep very well. I fall asleep so quickly. So I've noticed for red light therapy, for me, it's more about the waking up aspect. Mm-hmm. I feel so energized the few times that I've done the red light therapy and the light therapy in terms of the morning and like being like fired up and ready to go for the day. So I'm excited to have more of that. So thank you for being here and educating our audience.
That was a pleasure, Drew. Thanks for having me on.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Just a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not, I repeat, it's not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or otherwise qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Provider database. It's important that you have somebody in your corner that's qualified, that's trained, that's a licensed healthcare practitioner helping you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.